Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Let's just say up front that New Hampshire's economy, by many measures, looks good. Our unemployment rate is the 11th lowest in the nation at 5.1%. And other statistics cast a positive economic glow on our state, from per capita income to poverty rates. Still, among the economists, business leaders, and analysts who watch the big economic trends, uncertainty is a word you hear a lot lately, even stagnation. The reason for these less than rosy assessments vary. Some say it's an increasingly unfriendly business environment. Some say it's an aging demographic. Some say it's high energy and high health care costs. And some say it's a confluence of economic, demographic, and political shifts that the Granite State has yet to really wrap its head around. Today in The Exchange, we survey New Hampshire's economic landscape, and let's hear from you from your own vantage point. How does that view of the economy look to you? Is talk of stagnation overdone, or do you share those concerns? Join us at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on Facebook, it's NHPR Exchange. All one word. We have two guests in studio. Steve Norton is here, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. And Steve, welcome back. It's nice to see you.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Brian Gottlob, Principal of Polycon Research, a firm with a focus on economic and public policy issues. And Brian, thank you also for your time.
Morning, Laura.
And a little bit later in the hour, we'll hear from several business people, get their perspective on the economy as well. I wanted to just start off, though, gentlemen, it's a new year, 2014. Brian, your outlook for the year?
Well, I think New Hampshire's economy is improving, but still performing much below what we have become accustomed to. And I think, again, we're going to face a year where people are going to be scratching their heads and asking themselves, why can't we do better?
You know, that's interesting. And Steve, for the last 3 years, I feel like when we've done these New Year economic check-ins, that's what folks have said. It's going to be okay, not great.
Yeah, that's about it. The New England economic forecast is about 2% growth, and that seems bad when you look at the last 20 years of growth, but I call it bumping along.
Bumping along. So what do you guys think? I mean, let's look at the glass half full. I mean, unemployment, relatively low, 5.1%, 11th lowest in the nation, as I said, low poverty rates, high per capita income levels. As both of you know, Politico, a well-regarded news and information website, recently ranked New Hampshire the strongest state in the nation. So what do you think, Steve? Are you too gloomy?
No, I wouldn't say gloomy at all. We have a lot of structural strength as a state, and I think that's what you're seeing in these surveys. We're a very nice place to live. We're a safe place to live. I think, however, when you look at some of the future or the predictors of the future, we fare a little bit less well. We certainly graduate a lot of high school students, but we don't have a lot of our own residents that go on to degree-granting institutions. So, you know, human capital, financial capital off of the future, I think, is a question mark. And so we have this long-time recession coming out of the recession field, but we've also got some uncertainty about these indicators of future economic growth.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about those structural strengths and what may be happening to those in just a minute, Steve. But Brian, to you too, you know, I know they call economics the dismal science, but are you and Steve being a little too dismal here? I mean, strongest state in the nation, right?
Yeah, there's clearly a lot of great things going on in New Hampshire, and it's a wonderful state to live in. Compared to a lot of states, we really are the envy. But there's a counterpoint to all of the positives, just like there's a counterpoint to all of the negatives. The positive that we have a very low unemployment rate. The negative there is that our labor force has shrunk. Is shrinking, so that accounts for some of that low level of unemployment. We are adding jobs, but we're not adding jobs at the rate that some of our neighbors who we used to grow more quickly than. In addition, some of the quality, the questions about the quality of those jobs, we added about 5,000 private sector jobs last year. 60% of them were in the retail trade industry. Another 12% were in lodging and restaurants. So there's a point counterpoint to all of the data. We're adding jobs, We've got a low unemployment rate, but there's some downsides that account for that.
Well, and as you mentioned, our neighbors. So one of the comparisons you guys started out making with is how well we've recovered from past recessions. And it's been said repeatedly that we're not recovering as quickly and as impressively as we have from past recessions. But since you mentioned the neighbors, Brian Gottlob, let's go there. Steve Norton, how much better are other states doing? I mean, it seems the national narrative is kind of what you guys are saying, slow but steady.
Yeah, that's true, but that's not true of Massachusetts. And when you compare the recessionary path between New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Maine, and Vermont, Massachusetts looks like a rocket going off, even
really?
Though it's only 3.5% or 4% growth. But it's much, much faster, much quicker than our growth. The other thing I think it's worth saying is that not every part of New Hampshire is experiencing the same thing. You know, if you look at 2000 to 2010, generally the decade of the Great Recession, you saw negative job growth for the state, about 1% job. But if you look at Grafton County, they saw an increase. If you look at Carroll County, they saw an increase in the number. But then you look in the Lakes region and you saw, and Coos in the North Country saw real reduction. So there's big variation, just as there are across states, within New Hampshire and how the economies have fared.
Yeah, and we talked to Ross Cattell a couple of weeks ago about how you almost can't say the New Hampshire economy, right, Steve? Because
right.
There's so many different little microeconomies.
Yeah, you call them, at our office, we talk about economic ecology.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Upper Connecticut Valley, Grafton area, the Seacoast
Hanover
area,
booming, right? Seacoast booming.
Booming, Nashua booming, Manchester not so booming. Lakes region, you know, very cyclical with the tourism, you know, industry.
All right. So Steve mentioned Massachusetts, maybe not quite a Massachusetts miracle to use an old term. But Brian, what are those Bay Staters doing that we aren't in the Granite State?
Well, I think, you know, Massachusetts has some of the same issues that you just talked about, a regional, strong regional differences in their economy with Eastern Massachusetts and the greater Boston metro area doing very well. And the remainder of the state, it's a much more slower growth and mixed bag. Massachusetts has what I, again, too often say is the most valuable resource of the 21st century. They've got a lot of talent, a lot of brains. They've got a lot of very skilled, well-educated individuals. And probably most importantly, they've got a steady influx of them. They've got wonderful universities that consistently attract the best talent from around the world. And they replenish that skill base. They graduate, you know, thousands of high-skill individuals every year. And that's very attractive to industries that are emerging, industries that are growing. We're losing a lot of industries to lower-cost production areas in the world. That always happens. It's always been a factor in New England. We've always been innovators, only to lose out eventually to lower-cost areas in the world. But we were able to innovate, and really the Boston metro area has been the source of that innovation, and talent has been the key. Smart people have been the key. And that, you know, jumping ahead is a key, I think, eventually for New Hampshire to recognize that.
Okay, one more question on this Massachusetts, and then I do want to turn to other things. But since you both mentioned it, and others have also written, too, that coming out of the recession, Massachusetts does look darn good. Steve Norton, you know, the Bay State has always had all those colleges and universities. They've always had that high per capita concentration of young, educated people. That's always been the dynamic. And yet, as both of you have said, New Hampshire has pulled out of recession faster before than it is now. So what's the difference? I mean, that fundamental difference between New Hampshire and, New Hampshire and Massachusetts hasn't changed.
Right. Well, I think what's changed is what often pulls New Hampshire out of the recession is construction. And so when that starts to boom, then people start to spend resources and the economy gets going. People start feeling good about the world. That didn't happen this time. And that didn't happen because the real pressure of migration and development isn't occurring. And I suspect that we'll see in retrospect, you know, 5 years from now, that there are other shifting trends in knowledge workers that were maybe a little behind. But I think the primary driver of the past, at least, was the housing industry.
Interesting. Brian, your thoughts real quick?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the locus of growth is changing as more industries that are successful in this country that are growing depend more on skill and talent as opposed to cheaper land, cheaper labor. New Hampshire always had those advantages. You know, we have been traditionally a lower cost We're certainly not a cheap state, not a low-cost state, but relative to Massachusetts, much lower. Now, more of the industries that are growing, that are very successful, that is still a concern, but what is really a concern is the access to the skill level and the talent. That's the number one thing that determines where they'll locate and how successful in their ability to grow. And so as, you know, it's become less critical that New Hampshire offer cheaper alternatives in terms of land, in terms of buildings, even in terms of labor. I think we haven't had that quite the same advantage relative to Massachusetts. They have an advantage in talent. There's no doubt about it.
Our phone number here in the exchange for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Join us as we take the temperature of the New Hampshire economy. We're looking at how well we've been recovering from the recession, why some other states seem to be recovering better. Join us with your thoughts from your own vantage point. How does the New Hampshire economy look to you? Is talk of stagnation overdone, or do you share some of those concerns? Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Since you mentioned costs, Brian, and Steve, I'll throw this to you. Charlie Arlinghouse of the Josiah Bartlett Center wrote a column recently where he cited two instances of past New Hampshire governors lowering business taxes. He said that not only gave businesses a boost, but just the whole state a psychological boost, an image boost. Come here, we're friendly to business.
And that's probably true. I mean, whether it had actually any economic impact on the decision-making of businesses is another question entirely that's difficult to answer. And, you know, this question of what is the New Hampshire advantage, is it a tax advantage, is never really going to be answered. It's just too difficult. It varies by business. We do know that when you lower business taxes, there's some impact on decision making, but you have to really lower business taxes quite a bit to be able to bring in the type of energetic response that you might like to. And certainly none of the changes in the past were of that size. So I think, you know, looking forward, we are a state that has to promote itself as a business-friendly place, as we are, and with a big talent pool and capital resources that are interested in being, as Brian said, an innovator. I think that is a strong message that needs to be promoted.
All right. We will talk more in just a moment. More conversation about the New Hampshire economy. And would love your thoughts, too, at 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. Make sure your membership gift to NHPR goes as far as it can with our corporate match program. Many businesses around the state match their employees' donations to NHPR. You can essentially double the impact of your membership gift. Find out if your company participates at nhpr.org. New Hampshire weather, we have a winter storm warning in effect for most of the state for Wednesday, a winter weather advisory for the North Country. Mostly sunny today, highs upper 20s, mid-30s, partly cloudy this evening, clouding up after midnight, snow developing, around an inch accumulation, lows upper teens to mid-20s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and Ansel & Anderson Trust and Estate Attorneys in Bedford, providing estate planning tailored to blended or unconventional families on the web at anselpa.com. And Goodwill Industries of Northern New England, seeking solutions at work in creating sustainable communities where nothing goes to waste. Not a shirt, not a shoe, not a person. GoodwillNNE.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about the New Hampshire economy, breaking down some of the numbers and looking ahead at 2014. We invite you to join us. What's your own economic forecast for the Granite State this year? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, email exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. That's all one word. With me in studio, Steve Norton with the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies and Brian Gottlob, principal of Polycon Research, a firm with a focus on economic and public policy issues. And with us now on the phone is Mark Primo. He's president and CEO of the Bank of New Hampshire. Mark, it's very nice to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, you gave a presentation recently looking at the state of the state's economy these days. What did you say? Give us a little summary of that, if you could, please.
Well, the point I was trying to make was that over the last 10 years or so, the bloom is a little bit off the rose in New Hampshire. We had almost 30 years of very outstanding growth, much of which migrated up from Massachusetts because we had such lower costs and so many advantages. And that really has, over the last 10 years or so, even starting even before the recession, has ended. And I think New Hampshire has to take a new, more hard-nosed and practical approach to trying to attract new businesses to the state and also to assist homegrown businesses in growing. Because the easy growth, the in-migration from Massachusetts, you know, the back in the days when the computer companies were moving up here and Fidelity moved up here and everything else, those days are pretty much over, and we're going to have to be much more aggressive at growing our own businesses and attracting others from out of state.
Now, why do you suppose that low costs don't matter as much as they used to, Mark? That's interesting.
Well, I think, you know, back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, when you compared costs in greater Boston compared with southern New Hampshire had a tremendous advantage, not only for businesses, but also for individuals that wanted to have a lower cost of housing. So tens of thousands of people moved up to New Hampshire from Massachusetts to take advantage of lower cost land, lower cost of housing, and businesses as well came along, and many employees followed them. Southern New Hampshire's built out pretty much today. Not a lot of new developable land. The costs are pretty much similar to greater Boston, so that the attractiveness of southern New Hampshire as a place to migrate to for businesses and individuals is less than it used to be.
Well, and you mentioned that given all this, the importance of homegrown businesses is more important than ever. You work with small businesses at your bank, of course, Mark. What are they telling you when they come in for help with loans about what they want, what they need to grow?
Well, it's interesting, Laura. There are some small businesses, including some that have started up recently, that are doing very well, particularly technology-oriented companies. I can think of a couple that really have seen some very nice growth, and they're actually able to attract the talent they need. On the other hand, the smallest mom-and-pop type businesses, you know, the small restaurants and service-type companies, a lot of them are still struggling. They're having a tough time generating increases in revenue. And, you know, frankly, a lot of them are just hanging on because the economy, as mentioned earlier, is bumping along. We're getting better. We're seeing, you know, signs of growth, and that's been true the last year or so. But it's not dynamic, and, you know, I think disposable income is still a little bit tight. And consumers, frankly, having gone through the recession, are saving more and spending less.
So, yeah, I'd love to ask you about that, actually, going from the business side to the more individual customer side. What are you seeing, Mark, in terms of, you mentioned it, but spending, borrowing, saving? It's often said that prior to the recession, Americans way overspent and had too much credit.
Oh, they clearly did, particularly mortgage credit. And I think, you know, you can't speak for everyone, but I do believe that the average consumer is much more debt averse than they were before. They're trying to pay down credit card bills. They're being more careful, trying to save more money. And we've seen, you know, we've seen deposits grow in the bank despite the very low interest rates. And that's a sign that people are possibly saving a little bit more and spending less. And I think they're just concerned about their financial future, particularly having gone through the last several years of a economic crisis and then a very weak recovery.
Well, and there's this whole thing called the paradox of thrift, right, Mark? That if people save too much, then they're not out, you know, shopping at the local store and eating at the local restaurant, and that hurts the economy.
No, absolutely. You know, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
That's for sure. But having a more balanced approach, you know, from the personal balance sheet point of view is certainly much better to, you know, watch your spending and not overdo it. But you're right. The flip side of that is that the businesses don't see as much revenue.
Well, one last question for you, Mark, if I could, please. And this relates to your own particular industry, banking. We did a show a couple weeks back about the housing sector, and there was some concern expressed that new lending regulations might clamp down on housing. They might be requiring too much upfront cash before somebody could get a mortgage, that we've kind of gone overboard in trying to make sure we didn't have another sort of mortgage meltdown that we saw in the mid-2000s. I wonder what you think about that.
Well, I do think the qualified mortgage regulations and the ability to pay regulations are certainly going to make it more difficult for people to take out mortgages, simply because there's going to be more documentation, more underwriting checks, and just more process that's going to have to go into it. On the other hand, I think most of the banks in New Hampshire, I know in our case at Bank of New Hampshire, we are going to continue to make mortgages that both qualify under the new regulations and mortgages that do not qualify, because we feel that the housing market is reasonably strong. We think we do a very good job of underwriting loans. So I would think, at least in terms of our own bank, getting access to mortgage credit is going to continue to be pretty open, despite those new regulations. But it's just going to be more documentation, more difficult, and there will be some people that fall through the cracks that won't qualify under the new regs and just can't be underwritten. So that is going to happen, but I don't think it's going to put a big damper on the mortgage market.
All right, Mark Primo, it's been really good having you on the air. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Laura.
Mark Primo, President and CEO of the Bank of New Hampshire. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on Facebook if you'd like. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. Before we go to our listeners, gentlemen, Brian Gottlob, I wonder if you wanted to jump in on just the idea of lending and how that plays a role in moving the economy forward or not.
Yeah, it's a big plays a big role. And of course, that was a big part of the recession and the severity of the recession is that it was just incredibly difficult for businesses and for individuals as well to get loans. I think we're really fortunate in New Hampshire is that we've just got a really terrific group of local banking institutions, community banks.
I wonder if that's unusual because you're right. There do seem to be these strong sort of local and regional banks.
Yeah, I think that it's definitely an asset because they have the strongest commitment to their communities. They know their communities. They know the individuals in the communities. They can make those kinds of loans to businesses. Sometimes based on character because they know the business, they know the individuals. They're not just formula loans. So, people like Mark and those community bankers are going to play a big role in helping New Hampshire's economy thrive.
Steve?
If you look over the last 30 years, one of the things we discovered is there's been a decline in the financial stock for New Hampshire generally. And that's one of the reasons why we may not be as productive as we have been in the past. But those communities that are seeing real growth right now are those communities that have increases in the talent pool as measured by things like the share of the population with the BA and also that capital. And you think about the real capital needs in New Hampshire, I wonder, are not the residential mortgages, but the business loan. It's slightly more risky. That you might make, as Brian said, based on character as opposed to some formula. We certainly have a growing stock of venture capitalists, which is great and important for economic innovation. But that I wonder about that middle group. I just don't know much about it.
All right. Well, let's go to our listeners, gentlemen, hear what they think. And Bill is first calling in from Plymouth. Hi, Bill. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Laura. Great show.
Good.
I'm just calling to throw my two cents, and I'm the head of the New Hampshire Small Business Institute. Primarily, our membership is up. Excuse me, up in the Plymouth North Country area, up the 1093 corridor. And I did an informal survey of my membership at the end of last year, at the end of 2013. The small employer, say 2 to 10 employees at the most, is really not expecting any great change this year from 2013. And some of them have actually just recently done significant layoffs.
Really?
Yes. The other issue that I think isn't considered much. It's hard to track, I believe. In my experience, it's been hard to track. Maybe your other guests who do this as their primary thing of checking the economy could speak to this. But the large majority of small businesses in the North Country of New Hampshire is, in fact, it's just sole proprietorships. Some of them aren't even registered because it's just not part of their way of doing things.
So why are they laying people off, Bill? What's the struggle? What's
I have to speak to one in particular because I was just discussing it with them yesterday. We're relying on tourism. Tourism has fallen off heavily, and there's a forecast, and I don't mean to bring other things into the mix, but there's a forecast of an additional drop-off in tourism in the region because of the different energy development projects.
Wow.
So we're looking at, and again, your guests are speaking to this. We have regional economic impacts that I have to look at on the macro scale. And I think that if we break it down by micro regional economies, I think we're going to see a much different picture, and you're going to see large areas of growth from speaking with my members in Portsmouth, heading there today, and then folks down on the Massachusetts border. They're going to have a much faster recovery than the folks up north, and okay. I think that we have to look at that.
Bill, thank you for calling. Yeah, and 2 points that I want to raise with both of you, and Brian, I'll throw the tourism one to you, and Steve, the regional issue to you, perhaps. What do you think, Brian? Some real concerns that tourism may be falling off, especially in the North Country. That's super important there. Now, they've had a good winter. We've had lots of snow, that's for sure.
You know, the data that I've seen coming out of the Institute for New Hampshire Studies, which, you know, tracks tourism revenue and activity for the state of New Hampshire, doesn't show a fall-off. So I'd be curious to see exactly what statistics he's referring to. On the energy issue, I think that's really unclear. You know, there's obviously a lot of concerns about it related to Northern Pass.
And whether that will ruin the landscape and
ruin the
tourism.
Landscape. I have to do a disclaimer here. I have looked at the issue of tourism impacts for wind developers, and so I do have a professional conflict there. But I have to say I did not find evidence of negative impacts.
A concern, he's expressing.
It's certainly a concern, but the reality and the data that I've looked at doesn't support that. I do think the other thing that he mentioned is that the impact on smaller businesses throughout the state. This recession was particularly difficult for very small businesses, the 2 to 10s.
Now, isn't recession always hard for small business?
It is, but it's usually they usually lead in terms of when the economy starts picking up. They usually pick up more quickly. This time, they really haven't. And if you look at the NFIB surveys of business confidence among very small business, they really haven't picked up much. So he's picking up on a real phenomenon.
Well, and it was great to hear from him because he works with small businesses. And Steve Norton, to his other point, you know, North Country, he's concerned about the mom and pops. He said he was heading over to the Seacoast today. Things are great there. What are your thoughts on these sort of micro economies that we see around New Hampshire? You touched on it earlier, but I'd love some more there.
Excuse me. He raises a good point, and that's one about how you get these ecologies pulling in the same direction for a particular set of goals. So the banks, the regional planning commissions, any efforts on the behalf of the state with the Division of Resource and Economic Development, how do you get them all going in the same direction? It may be in the North Country that you want to focus on tourism or that you want to focus on a particular type of industry. In the Upper Connecticut Valley, in Grantham County, you might want to focus on a set of high-tech industries that are evolving out and around Hypotherm and other businesses like that, differences on the seacoast. So it's a question of recognizing that there are going to be different goals and different industries and different rates of growth, unfortunately, depending on the economic area you're
talking
about.
That old advice, focus on your strengths, focus on what you have.
That's right.
All right. Well, since he mentioned small businesses, I want to go now to Emmett Soldati. He's founder and co-owner of Teetotaler, a tea cafe and bistro in Somersworth. He also owns Levin Beer and Bread House. Both businesses were financed through crowdsourcing. And Emmett, it's great to have you. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks.
Well, it seems to me, Emmett, you're capitalizing on this local foodie trend that we see here in New Hampshire, a tea house and a beer and bread house. How does that trend look to you in terms of making a go at it with some businesses?
It's interesting when people talk about tourism and tracking whether that's waning or whether it's rising. Where I am and where we are in Somersworth, we've kind of never had, at least for the last century, a major influx of tourism. And so the local food movement has really been about changing local culture and changing expectations of people that live in the community, that live, you know, they can walk to the restaurant or they can get there close by, and where they want to go for food, where they want to go for small businesses. And that's kind of the battle we're up against, and not about sort of larger trends in driving people up north.
Yeah, so to heck with the tourists, huh?
Yeah, and it's been a good response because it's allowed us to experiment a lot more. And we do have, we're very close to Berwick, Maine, and we're connected to some more agrarian areas that, already embrace the local food movement and is kind of like engaging with those cultures.
Well, it's always a scary prospect to open a small business, Emmett. I wonder what you looked at, what you considered before opening these two businesses.
I was, at least for the first one, which I opened about 2.5 years ago, it was the tea house. I was very optimistically naive in a lot of ways, which kind of ultimately led to the benefit of the business. But, you know, I had just finished graduate school. I had, you know, mountains of student debt, little to no business experience, but just a passion for my city and a passion for the business I wanted to start. And it was actually the tools, technological innovations and, you know, web tools that existed only in the last, you know, 3 to 4 years that really enabled me to sort of take a plunge. And that's, you know, whether using crowdsourcing tools or using new business, you know, operational and business management tools, those were kind of key to having someone in my position access a small business and a small storefront.
So in the past, you might not have been able to access those sort of investment funds, but with crowdsourcing and so forth, you were able to do it.
Definitely, yeah.
Talk about the other business, the beer and bread business. There's been a lot of discussion lately, Emmett, about New Hampshire becoming a microbrew haven, competing with Vermont on that end. I wonder what you're seeing.
We are seeing a similar, and actually we, you know, me and my business partners caught the same bug initially and wanted to be a microbrewery. And as we sort of moved through the process, kind of realized because New Hampshire and the region celebrates craft beer so much, we didn't necessarily want to compete, but we wanted to be allies with all of these different breweries and be a venue that they can host, you know, their product and that we can engage with them and engage with the wider market. So we've definitely sort of felt it, and we've been sort of tapped into the trends on a legislative end and tapped in on a sort of cultural end and what's the conversation about craft beer in the area. But it definitely connects, and what our restaurant ties to, Glafter's, connecting to the foodie aspect of craft beer. So the people that that have a distinguished palate or want to push their boundaries or get out of their food and beer comfort zone, and that infrastructure and that culture is already here, and we kind of just work with it.
Well, real quick, Emmett, because we don't have much time, your economic forecast for 2014 as the owner of these two very small businesses, you feeling optimistic or not?
So I am incredibly optimistic. I think everything is very hyper-local and context-driven, and in Somersworth, there has been nothing but a push forward towards a renaissance and revitalization. And so I think right where my businesses are situated, in the downtown historic area, we're going to see a big uptick.
All right. Emmett, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
That's Emmett Soldati, again, founder and co-owner of Teetotaler, a tea cafe and bistro in Somersworth. He also co-owns Levin Beer and Bread House. And as he told us, both small businesses were financed through crowdsourcing. We'll take more of your phone calls and thoughts and comments in just a moment. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. All one word, this is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, what's behind the sharp rise in heroin use in the U.S.? Then this month's environmental outlook, dolphin hunting in Japan. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. New Hampshire weather, we have a winter storm warning in effect for most of the state for tomorrow, Wednesday. There's a winter weather advisory for the North Country. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Hillsborough House, a locally owned nursing facility, improving the experience and delivery of rehab and residential care for over 50 years. Information at hillsboroughhouse.org. And from Edward Jones, a financial services firm serving individuals and business owners. Edward Jones, making sense of investing, a member of SIPC. It is 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we take another look at gambling in the Granite State and efforts to expand it again this year. Today in The Exchange, we're taking the pulse of the New Hampshire economy, talking about some of the things that are happening in various sectors around the state. We want your thoughts, questions, comments, 1-800-892-6477. How would you gauge New Hampshire's economic health these days? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. The email is exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. All one word. And Steve Norton, Brian Gottlob, let's go right back to our listeners. And Steve's calling from Loudoun. Hi, Steve. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Laura. Great program. I enjoyed the conversation there, both with your last caller as well as the Bank of New Hampshire CEO there. It the area that I wanted just to bring attention in the Bank of New Hampshire gentleman sort of did was, it. I really think individual disposable income is an issue. I do own a small mom and pop store. My wife and I own a little candy store in Loudoun, and as a retail business, it seems that the consumer is being torn with the taxes. This being school tax season, Merrimack Valley is proposing a 10.3% increase in their budget this year, which would affect taxes on top of last year's. The energy costs, we see the propane going to $5 a gallon. The utilities, Public Service of New Hampshire and others, natural gas, and just what affects us as a small business is taking money out of people's pockets and not allowing them to consume. And I think evidence of that is stores like Abercrombie & Fitch and Aeropostale leaving the Steeplegate Mall.
That's right, yeah.
How it's affecting the consumer, which is in turn affecting the retailer, which in turn is affecting the overall economy.
Sure, and rising costs, Steve, and also, you know, what we heard earlier from Brian Gottlieb is wage growth hasn't been super either, so rising costs hurt even more.
And then, you know, my opinion on wage growth, Laura, is that minimum wage increase. You've got to believe that if you require small retailers such as myself to pay teenagers and other people a higher wage in the idea that it will help them out in there, it's going to translate to a higher cost in the candy. It's going to a higher cost in the burger that you buy, a higher cost. The business owner is going to have to pass those costs on. So I haven't done a lot of look at it, but I haven't paid a lot of attention to how it would affect me directly, but I just got to believe that, you know, I don't pay, my employees do make more than minimum wage, so I'm not real concerned, but throughout the whole economy, I don't know that increasing wages translates to better spending or are they going to get as much as the increase in their spending is. So,
okay, yes, Steve.
That is a good point, though.
And great thoughts. Thank you very much. And we should touch on some of these increasing costs, Steve Norton. Energy costs, for sure, are a big concern for businesses here in the state, from, you know, little guys like Steve at his candy shop to big manufacturers. Taxes are growing up. A lot of concerns about the cost of doing business here in New Hampshire.
When we did some work recently with the Business and Industry Association, looking at how we compare to other parts of the country, it's pretty clear we're highly educated. We're fiscally quite sound. We've got relatively low taxes when you look across all the various incidences of tax. Where we fare more poorly is in the cost, energy, healthcare. And, you know, grappling with those is fairly hard because those are about big changes in infrastructure. You know, imagine creating a big natural gas pipeline to New Hampshire. That type of infrastructure project is really difficult. So I'm not sure we're going to be able to really manage those in the short term. Those are real long-term cost infrastructure changes. I think the real issue in consumer spending is just that the economy has not picked up and wages have not increased.
Well, and the jobs that Brian mentioned earlier are often in those low-wage industries.
Yeah. You know, when you look over the 10 years or the coming out of the recession, you know, two-thirds of the jobs pay less than the median wage in the state. So, you know, those aren't considered good jobs.
If I could focus in just on the energy costs for a minute. And, Steve, thank you very much for all your points. Brian Gottlieb, economist Lisa Shapiro did a presentation recently saying that New Hampshire, New England pay energy costs 40% higher than the rest of the country. Even the Northeast, our friends in the Northeast have enjoyed the benefits of lower cost natural gas, but not here in New Hampshire because of the pipeline issue. The governors got together on this recently, the governors of New England. You know, Steve Norton mentioned that this is a big long-term problem, but it seems like it's got to be addressed and maybe in the medium term, if not in the short term.
And I think it will be addressed. I'm optimistic on that front. It is creating some difficulties now, but there's so many positive developments on the energy front in this country. We're becoming much more energy self-sufficient. The natural gas, I know that environmental concerns arise out of the fracking, but we have an abundant supply of energy that's very close to us, you know, as close as New York State and Pennsylvania. what we have is a strong economic incentive to create additional pipeline capacity that will relieve a lot of the cost issues that we are confronting now in a cold winter when there's shortages. I think everything is in place except for some of the concerns that typically arise, the concerns of local environmental communities about having pipelines travel through. But I do want to say, on the energy front, more of what we produce in this state is less energy dependent. That is, our gross domestic product, our gross state product, we have a lower energy content of that than we have over the last many decades, and it continues to decline. What that means is that the goods and services we're producing depend less and less all of the time on energy.
And that's a good thing.
That is a good thing. So the impacts are likely to continue to diminish. It's not a good thing at all to have high energy costs. But is it the thing that will make or break our economy? Given where the industry growth is, where we're growing, the types of industries, it's certainly an impediment. I just don't think it's the thing that's going to make or break our economy.
All right. Well, Steve, again, thanks for that call. Good luck at your candy shop. I want to bring in another sector that has definitely had its ups and downs in recent years. Joining us now on the phone is Preston Hunter. He's Director of Business Development for Ekman Construction, based in Bedford, which does commercial construction. And Preston Hunter, great to have you. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Laura. Thank you for having me.
Well, just a little history, if you could, Preston. Just remind us how your company, your business, was affected by the recession in the mid-2000s.
Well, I think one thing that's unique about the construction industry with regards to the recession is that we were actually probably one of the last industries to feel the effects of the recession. Many of our projects were already funded. At the same time, things were starting to collapse in other industries. And so the construction industry really, I think, was really the last one into the recession and consequently will likely be the last one out.
So do you still feel like you're in recession, Preston?
Yes. Yeah, I think the general consensus is we do still feel that that we are in recession. I think that there has been a weak recovery, marginal increases in volumes and activity in the construction industry over the last year or two. I'm optimistic that 2014 may bring more work to the state, but we're definitely still well below pre-recession volumes.
And are you tending to get more business, Preston, in redeveloping existing buildings rather than building new ones?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the trend. I think most businesses and owners and folks that are looking to make improvements are more likely to do a renovation, an addition, instead of building new. And I think a lot of it goes back to some of the comments made by others earlier, that there still is a concern that for the financial future. I think that the construction industry, to a certain extent, is a good barometer for the feeling of the financial security. So what we've been seeing is more interest in rehabilitation, repurposing of buildings, and less ground-up new construction work.
So I'm hearing some concern about 2014 from you, Preston, but also optimism. You're not saying it's going to be a terrible year.
No, I don't think it's going to be a terrible year. I don't see us going backwards. We are starting to see some increases in construction material costs, but I think labor costs are still very affordable. It's still a great time for a business or institution or a municipality to build. Construction costs are still very low, and it's a good time to build. So hopefully there are folks out there that are willing to bet on the improving economy and go forward with some new projects in 2014.
One last question for you, Preston, if I could. We've been talking a little bit this hour about policy and how much that matters at the state level in terms of economic recovery. What do you want to see happen at the state level in terms of policy that would help your industry, construction?
Well, one of the biggest impacts, I think, in the last 3 to 5 years has been the moratorium on state aid for school construction projects. So I believe it was around 2010 that the state suspended funding for school construction projects. And, you know, that was, you know, approximately $160 million a year in construction, which has now really, for all intents and purposes, ended. The state was providing 30% grant towards new school construction projects. And now towns and municipalities are forced to pay the entire cost of construction themselves. And as another caller pointed out earlier, folks are not really interested in raising their taxes right now, and I think there's still some concern. So it's a lot for small towns in New Hampshire to be asked to pay for the full cost of some larger school construction projects.
All right, Preston, thank you very much for being with us.
All right, thank you.
That's Preston Hunter, Director of Business Development for Ekman Construction, based in Bedford, which does commercial construction. And gentlemen, let's take another comment or two from our listeners before we close out the hour. Diana's joining us from Tilton. Hi, Diana. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura. This is Diana Lacey from the State Employees Association.
Hi, Diana.
great show. I just wanted to elevate a question here because I'm wondering if there is research and sort of long-term strategic planning being handled with the business community in terms of the shifting demographic of New Hampshire. And I know Steve is one of your guests, and we will be grappling significantly with the silver tsunami because New Hampshire's older population is moving into retirement. It's a very large part of our population, which means they will be increasingly reliant on public services, which obviously impacts property taxes, and they will be in their earning income, you know, years will be behind them, and the newer generations that we have coming up are looking at futures with generally lower wages than their predecessors. I know we're investing in STEM jobs, but those will come slowly and frankly can be migrated to other states depending on the global economy. I'm wondering if there's any research being done that sort of targets the number of jobs that we need to create that would not be likely for migration for this younger generation that will be sufficient to sustain the transformation of our demographics here in
okay.
New Hampshire.
Diana, thank
one
you.
Other point, one
yeah,
other point
I just...
is that that generation is less likely to buy property.
Yes, we did a show on that actually just recently, how younger people are much more interested in renting than buying. Diana, thank you. Sorry to cut you off there, but I did want to get to you, Steve Norton. She's using your words, silver tsunami, et cetera.
I think I'm going to refer back to Brian's words, which is the talent climate. I mean, this is really about how you can maintain a labor force, which is, you know, incredibly important, whether you're an innovator economy or a manufacturing economy. You need young, talented people and in the economy.
Brian, did you want to jump in there? Diana, thanks a lot for the call.
No, I think she raises a lot of interesting issues. I don't know that we know exactly how many of those individuals or can calculate how many we need in order to offset the retirements. I will make one point because she was with the State Employees Association. I've looked at the demographics of that labor force, and it's probably the oldest industry average age-wise of any that we have in New Hampshire in terms of the average age of employees in state government is among the highest of any industry. It is the
highest. So there'll be a lot of turnover there coming
up. A lot
up.
Of turnover there. So I would suggest that they start working on that issue themselves.
Well, and as we talk about this talent climate that you gentlemen keep referring to, here's an email from Timothy who says, the question you're not addressing is, why would anyone want to relocate to New Hampshire from more progressive states and cities? Having lived in Salt Lake City, San Diego, L.A., Washington, I quickly realized what I gave up and what New Hampshire does not offer. Timothy says, I feel like I've traveled back in time. Seems to be too to no investment by the state and cities in quality of life. For a state capital, Concord's downtown is sad. It should be a beautiful, thriving business center. The reality is, after 5 p.m., businesses close their doors for the evening.
You know, I think, well, he put it rather strongly, but I've talked about this and written about this issue of the amenities that communities offer and that's related to quality of life. And, you know, I've argued that the locus of economic activity has been shifting to the seacoast. You could make a case that it's also in the Hanover-Lebanon area. Those are areas that have made real strong investments in continuing or improving the amenities, the quality of their services, even as, you know, certainly fiscal pressures, and they're mindful of those, but they've paid attention to the issue of offering social, cultural, civic, natural, and built amenities in their communities.
So is that the new New Hampshire advantage, Brian?
Well, I think that's the fundamental public policy question we have to ask. Are we losing our advantage, the New Hampshire advantage, or has the nature of the advantage shifted?
So the old New Hampshire advantage was our tax advantage.
Well, maybe, but more importantly, has the advantage from other people's perspective changed?
Right.
So what is it that these other people who used to come to New Hampshire, how are we going to draw those people here?
What do they care about?
And if you look at these three hotspots of economic activity in the state, there is another common denominator, and that's a very strong educational system, higher educational system. And so talent, amenities, nice place to live, access to talent, and the university college world that brings amenities, concerts, as well as talent, I think, critically important.
All right. Sounds like another show, guys. The new New Hampshire advantage. What is it? Timothy, thank you for that email very much. And Steve Norton and Brian Gottlob, thank you very much for being here as well. Steve, good to see you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Steve Norton, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. Brian, thank you for your time as
well.
My
pleasure, Laura.
Brian Gottlob, principal of Polycon Research, a firm with a focus on economic and public policy issues. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Nate Graby. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, new odds for gambling. After yet another casino bill failed last year, new versions have emerged with new regulations attached in hopes of appeasing opponents. Supporters say a casino would bring in much-needed revenue, but opposition remains among those worried about social costs and those who question whether it would be profitable given expanded gambling elsewhere in New England. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio, where we get support from UR members and from the law firm of Oren Reno, bringing sound judgment and a practical approach to New England's legal challenges for more than 65 years, online at or-reno.com. And Home Healthcare Hospice and Community Services presenting Walk-In Wednesday, February 5th, with information about home care in southwestern New Hampshire. hcsservices.org.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO, Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
Good morning. It's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. On Sunday, actor Philip Seymour Hoffman was found dead in his New York City apartment of an apparent heroin overdose. The sudden death of the 46-year-old Oscar winner comes amid a nationwide jump in heroin addiction.